It's 2:05 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios, and it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, in just a few days, we'll have a brand new mayor who's being sworn in by Kamala Harris for some reason. But I'm starting to analyze what are the new mayor Karen Bass's tics. We hear how she sounds normally.
It's not a namsy-pamsy thing.
But I've noticed when she starts screaming in front of a crowd, she raises her pitch a few notes.
You ready for the holidays? I'm ready for the holidays, too.
We've got a lot to look forward to from Mayor Karen.
That's right. This will be the mayor in 6 days.
You ready for the holidays? I'm ready for the holidays, too.
Which cartoon character she sounds like, I couldn't tell you, but I bet someone will email us shortly.
We also have some breaking news to bring to you. According to the Associated Press, the man who shot Lady Gaga's dog walker and stole her dogs last year just agreed to a plea deal and has been sentenced to 21 years.
He got more time than Avenatti?
And Todd Chrisley.
That's the one that hurts the most for Johnny.
That was such a strange story when it broke. You had a dog walker who was shot and dogs who were stolen. And everyone cared about the dogs and no one gave a damn that the dog walker got shot.
They were some cute dogs.
And people weren't even being particularly discreet about that being their reaction. It's a strange world we live in. 800-222-KABC is the telephone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest. Hello.
Maybe
we got him off.
Maybe we'll get him back in just a second. I don't think that was me, but it very much could have been.
Well, it's going with the theme of today's show. We cannot find a phone line that works.
Okay, I'm going to be really careful here. I'm not going to use my fatter finger. I'm going to use the thinnest finger I have, the pinky. Let's put them on. Okay, I think you got Robbie now.
Robbie Suave, Hello. Are you with us?
Yes.
All right. Well, let me give you a proper introduction here. Our next guest is the senior editor at Reason and author of the book Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump, available online at Amazon.com. You can read him online at Reason.com and follow him on Twitter at Robbie Suave. Robbie Suave, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Great to talk with you.
All right, that's the intro we'll use today. All right, let's start with the big news that happened at the end of last week and was being digested over the weekend. And that is the ugly portrait that was painted of the company Twitter, the social media giant. Twitter's new owner, Elon Musk, gave reporter Matt Taibbi, who's an excellent reporter, access to a bunch of internal company emails and records. And Taibbi, in a series of tweets, laid out just exactly how the company took extraordinary steps to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop story, including removing links and posting warnings that it may be unsafe to look at, which is typically what they do when they suspect that child pornography has been put on the net. Certainly, it was implied, at least, that the story had something to do with the Russians trying to screw with our elections. What do you make of all of this, and where do you see us moving to in the future, given the fact that this is now out of the bag?
Absolutely. Well, I think first things first, kudos to Elon Musk for wanting to make this more transparent and tell us more about what went wrong, because the public deserves to know. And kudos to Matt Taibbi, who, as you said, is a journalist I admire. I think he was a great choice for this project. What was revealed is, I think, very, very interesting. It does confirm what I think most of us who are paying very close attention to the story at this point already knew or assumed to be the truth, which is that this was a screw up by the employees, the decision to censor the story, to treat it as Russian-based disinformation. It still wasn't really identified, even in this new reporting, who quite was responsible for that. But once the story was internally considered to be unsafe or bad, then they kind of came up with this totally BS justification for suppressing it, which was hacked material that because the information had been obtained illicitly, they can't have it on the platform, just like you can't, you know, steal someone's, I don't know, credit card phone number or private videos or something and just start posting them willy-nilly. So that was their policy. Now, that obviously didn't fit the situation, and they kind of understand that if you look at the internal deliberations. But it kind of spirals from there. Jack Dorsey, by the way, the former CEO, not really involved. This is mostly the brainchild of this Vijaya Gad, who was the former head of trust and safety, who Elon Musk fired. And so, again, there's more confirmation that this was really on her doorstep. We did kind of already know that. So I want, you know, Musk overhyped this a little bit, because it's basically what we knew to be the case, which is that, look, woke employees of this company were terrified of hurting the Democratic Party with this story. And so they took this unprecedented step of suppressing it, you know, contrary to what lots of people, including Representative Ro Khanna, a California Democrat, he was in conversation with them saying, you can't do this. If you do this, you're hurting basic principles of free speech, and it's going to backfire massively. So he knew that, because he had emailed them to express concern about what they were doing. So it's really, I think it was very interesting, even though it's been overhyped a little bit by Elon Musk himself.
You know, since this story broke, I've seen any number of people who were involved in stories that were misreported wildly from the very beginning have called on Elon Musk to release all of the emails that pertain to them, including the Covington Catholic School kids and Kyle Rittenhouse. I can only imagine what the internal emails will look like with Jesse Smollett and that situation. Mm-hmm. Do you think what happened with Hunter Biden was a one-off thing, or do you think this was just how they did their business?
Oh, it definitely was a one-off thing. And they get requests to take down content all the time. Everyone's always making requests. Republicans are making requests. That's what Tyvee said. There's tons of examples of the Trump campaign.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Making their own requests. So whatever, people are going to ask for, you know, all sorts of things, but it's who did the previous Twitter regime, the previous employees, the previous Twitter administration, who did they feel like they had to pay attention to? Whose bidding did they think they had to serve or were serving? And it's clear that that's predominantly mainstream or progressive or Democratic interests and voices. Like that is so clear. All that said, I think this shows, again, the main really corrupting role of progressive media and mainstream media, because honestly, in this case, you can't even point to, though there were government forces, intelligence officials, et cetera, you know, the 50 former employees who said, oh, this is Russian disinformation. Whoopsie. What you can really point to, I think, in this case, in so many of these cases, it's the media. The media was screaming at these companies that, they said it throughout the laptop scandal. They said it throughout COVID, that if you allow misinformation on the platform, people will die. People are dying because of you, or our democracy is dying, or the whole planet is spinning off its axis because of your policies, Twitter, and your policies, Facebook, and your policies, Google. That's what the media is saying. And they were afraid of that, and they reacted to that. And in this case, and so many others, they reacted very, very badly by doing something that was idiotically stupid and self-destructive and has gotten them in all sorts of trouble. But it's almost, I want to refocus things a little bit from the blaming of big tech, which deserves blame, don't get me wrong, bad decisions. But the irresponsibility on the part of the media is what comes through. And you see that in the reaction to this story. How many reporters at, you know, places like MSNBC, NBC, et cetera, they're reacting to what Taibbi's done with condemnation. They're scolding him for having brought this up again because they are involved. They don't want you to remember that at the time they said it was disinformation, and if you shared it, you were a threat to democracy. That's what they said, and they don't want you to remember that.
Well, and if you look at what Twitter was doing, it wasn't just stories they didn't like. They were also going after and punishing satire they didn't like. They were going after accounts like the Babylon Bee and Libs of TikTok, which they thought were pushing an agenda that they didn't want any part of, so they wanted to suppress satire.
Yeah, I mean, Elon Musk has basically said that what happened to the Babylon Bee, I think, is actually a large part of his reason for buying the platform, is he wanted to correct that mistake, or what he viewed as a mistake. I think the rules were applied under the old regime in very non-transparent ways and ways that seem very biased and unfair to contrarians or conservatives or provocative people, I mean, especially on COVID, and that people are rightly upset about that and want some clarity around what's allowed. And that's, you know, what Elon has vowed to do. I don't know that he's always going to live up to it. I bet he's going to find that content moderation is a lot harder than a lot of the critics. I include myself. I've been a critic of the old rules and the old regime. Some of it is very hard to do. Because basically everyone thinks there's some line where, you know, if you just allow everything, it's going to become some horrible hell site and advertisers will run fleeing from it. Like he just rebanned Kanye West. He said he's not going to unban Alex Jones because that's too much. So it does get tricky at the margin, certainly. But I think anyone can do a better job than the people who were running it did. In particular with the New York Post, Hunter Biden story, which they admitted was, you know, Dorsey said that was a huge mistake. It's interesting that he was not very involved in these early emails about what they're deciding what to do about it. He's not even included, which is pretty interesting. I don't know what that says about, I guess, his interest in running the company, but he had deputized some people with very hostile to free speech attitudes to figure these things out, and the product shows.
You know, in the old days, it used to be if you were a celebrity or you were rich and you wanted power and influence over the culture to push society in one way or another, what you did was you took your money and you ran for office. That's what Donald Trump did. That's what Arnold Schwarzenegger did. That's what any number of others have done. In recent years, what they've been doing is buying newspapers. We have Jeff Bezos go in and he bought the Washington Post. You had Rupert Murdoch who bought the Wall Street Journal. And others who have fallen in their footsteps. But to my eye, if you want the maximum amount of power right now, buying one of the big tech companies, buying the Twitter, buying the Facebook, buying the Instagrams of the world seems to be the best way of doing it. It's hard to think of any person out there who has more power right now than Elon Musk.
That is true, although we have to keep in mind that Twitter is Twitter is important because it is well liked by policymakers, by journalists, by politicians. It's notable public figures, celebrities, etc. It's actually not a large platform compared to others overall. Like most people are on Facebook. Facebook is massive. Facebook is gigantic. YouTube is gigantic. Twitter is much smaller than a lot of its competitors. Its outsized role is because it's where all the people with like control over your lives or people discussing important policy questions, they like to hang out on Twitter. So its importance is due to that. These companies don't have I don't know that they necessarily have the staying power we might expect. Like, does anyone expect Facebook to be as important or powerful or meaningful to our lives ever again in the future as it was in, say, 2016 or 2017? I don't think so. I'd take the bet that it will never regain its prominent role in our lives. So that's the root you know, any of them could take. There's plenty of examples from past history. But, you know, to your point, is that a good way right now to get attention for yourself? Sure, absolutely. Kanye tried to buy a parlor that apparently is now falling through, given the kind of crazy rant he's been on these past few weeks. But look, there's no doubt that a lot of public conversations of importance are happening on social media sites. They're filling a kind of town square role in some sense, in some way, very imperfect one. And so then it's right for us to, you know, talk about what the rules would ideally be, or how we would like things to be on those platforms. And if someone like Elon Musk comes along and says, you know, I have free speech principles, I think they were unfair and biased before, and I'd like to bring the site closer to, you know, that kind of goal, I think that's a very noble thing to do. You know, a lot of people, I think myself included, we're finding ourselves suppressed on Twitter in some way. Like your growth, like artificially limited your followers.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show.
Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Send me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show, on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Tweets, they call it shadow banning, which everyone said was a conspiracy, but as far as I know, does actually seem to exist. So some clarity around things like that, I think, would be go a lot way toward restoring public faith in this platform. Just keep in mind, the most important platform right now, or in terms of the number of people using it, is TikTok, which raises all sorts of different national security concerns and censorship concerns, given it is a product of Chinese communist authoritarians.
We're speaking with Robbie Suave, who is the author of Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump, available online at Amazon.com. Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' attorney, was just sentenced today in Orange County to 14 years in prison for stealing millions of dollars from his clients. What a fall from grace this guy has experienced.
Yeah, I remember when some people thought he could be a Democratic presidential candidate, a contender. No one in recent memory has received as much fawning, adulation, adoration, attention from mainstream and progressive media. They worshiped him because this was the guy that was going to bring down Trump. I mean, he was a hero. They were literally drawing him in editorial cartoons with like Superman logo and cape. It's the, you know, quickest coronation you can think of for a public figure. And then, well, it turned out he was not a particularly ethical attorney. All sorts of other issues with him. I still remember his brief foray into the whole Brett Kavanaugh Me Too scandals debates. I mean, people obviously can reach different conclusions about what the extent of the validity of the accusers. But the accuser who was the most discredited was the one Julie Swetnick, the one whose accusations he had helped bring to light. And then it turned out there's a lot of different versions of that story, and it was not even close to as credible as the main one, Christine Blasey Ford, which, again, I don't know that people have different views of how credible they think that was. But Avenatti tanked that. He tanked everything. Everything he touched just turned to dog crap, and now he's going to jail. So that's not going to be a DNC contender, I don't think, anytime soon.
I'll never forget the night. It was right before all of these scandals broke. And I was having dinner with friends over at Craig's in West Hollywood. And at Craig's that night, and that's a place you go to if you're a celebrity and you want TMZ to get you photographed going into a restaurant. So it's always filled with celebrities and the food is very, very good. But in the restaurant that night, again, before all of their scandals dropped, were Lori Loughlin, the actress, Les Moonves, who was the head of CBS, and Michael Avenatti. And Avenatti was going from table to table at the restaurant like he was a politician running for office. And genuinely famous people who have been famous for a very long time, they all wanted selfies with Michael Avenatti because he was that hot at the moment. And boy, is he not.
Yeah, I can recall being at a White House correspondence dinner, like after party type thing in D.C. with tons of, I mean, the fake celebrities of D.C., right? News media celebrity type people. And also some genuine celebrities. And he was there, and he was the main guy. He was the celebrity the celebrities wanted to take selfies with. Same exact experience as you just described. It can't be overstated how in love with this guy your mainstream media figures were.
Tomorrow is the big runoff in the state of Georgia. The incumbent, Raphael Warnock, the Democrat, is going up against the Republican, Herschel Walker, the former football star. The polls show that race within the margin of error. Warnock finished on top the first time around. Where do you see that one going?
I'll be honest with you. I cannot imagine Herschel Walker possibly pulling it out at this point. He came up short in the initial run. He has to deal with the fact that Republicans are going to be very, depressed, given that they did much worse than expected in the midterms. And also, this doesn't ultimately control of the Senate is not resting on this. The Democrats already actually have control of the Senate, even if they were somehow to lose this one. Brian Kemp, the governor, the Republican governor who easily won re-election, his name isn't on the ballot. Obviously, there are people willing to vote for Republicans seem to like him better than Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker has so many problems. He's a weak candidate. I can go on and on. And then if it's just close, you know, Warnock has the advantages of incumbency. Warnock's policies are definitely not my policies, but you have to acknowledge that Walker is swimming upstream, everything going against him. And I think it's an indictment of some of the candidate choices. McConnell said this and he got crucified for it, but candidate choice matters. And we're seeing a lot of places where I bet Republicans wish they'd had a better candidate in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, et cetera, because some Republicans did win in the midterms, just not the really Trumpy ones. And I suspect that will ultimately be the case when this runoff is finished.
I'll tell you, in the state of Washington, in the state of California, we have completely open primaries. And a better predictor than any of the polls for how candidates were going to finish in November were the raw results from the primary election. That showed you where Patty Murray ended up, that showed you where Gavin Newsom ended up, and any number of other candidates in any number of other races. If what happened in Washington and what happened in California holds, then Warnock wins by a hair, but he wins that election. But time will tell. Robbie Suave, author of Panic Attack, Young Radicals in the Age of Trump, available online at Amazon.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Robbie Suave. Robbie Suave, thanks so much for stopping by.
My pleasure. Take care.
Well, Randy, we're going to talk about a subject right now that is near and dear to both of our hearts.
Near and dear to the hearts of anyone that's ever worked in radio.
In fact, it's clogged most of them. At least the arteries. Fast food, of course, was what we're talking about. And fast food really is something that you kind of had one idea for a long time as to what fast food was. But now it's changed. Now it's evolved. Now, if you talk about fast food, does Pizza Hut count as fast food? You can dine in. Order alcohol, but you can also get it at your doorstep in 30 minutes or less.
Heck, you go to Little Caesars, the pizza's already ready.
How about Chipotle? Is that fast food? That's fast casual. Starbucks? You can get food. It's fast. It's cheap-ish. And I'll tell you that the ethos and the experience that you have in each one of these individual locations changes based on which brand you're talking about. It can be something totally different. For a very long time, when I lived in Los Angeles County, I would walk to my neighborhood Starbucks and get my coffee in the morning there. That Starbucks was closed down by the Starbucks Corporation because they could not ensure the safety of their staff and their customers. And it was a highly profitable store, so you know their liability had to be off the charts. And that store became dangerous when the homeless took over And as a woke company, Starbucks completely lost control over what went on in their stores, their bathrooms, outside their stores, and they refused to do anything about it. So ultimately, what they ended up doing was just shutting down their location. When I moved to Riverside County, I went to a different Starbucks and I would get my morning coffee there. That Starbucks was now just closed because they could not ensure the safety of their employees or their customers. So instead of trying to influence what the city council was doing, they just said, all right, we're closing shop and we're moving on. So now I get my morning coffee over at the McDonald's. And the coffee, by the way, is very good. You wouldn't think McDonald's has hot coffee. You just think it burns crotches. But McDonald's has very good coffee.
They call it McCafe.
And it's totally different inside the McDonald's than it is inside the Starbucks. In Starbucks, you have homeless people having episodes all the time. They never stop bothering you. They smell. They're in your space. It's awful. And you think of a Starbucks as being a more upscale sort of fast food restaurant. And you think of McDonald's as being bottom barrel. But McDonald's is the exact opposite. You don't have problems at the McDonald's. And I was thinking about why that's the case. And the answer that I came to, Randy, and maybe you come to a different one, is that with McDonald's, they're franchises. So you have a local owner who's there, and they see what's going on a daily basis, and they just won't put up with that. But with Starbucks, they don't have franchises. It's one woke company, and they rule like a king out of Seattle. And when the woke king makes a decree, everyone has to follow it. And if you're in California, where you have a DA who won't prosecute anyone, or you have a state that won't keep anyone in jail once you catch them, or you have a law that says you don't—it's not even a felony to steal anything below $750, it doesn't work. Well, the whole system falls apart.
And above all, McDonald's has been known for a very long time to be a stickler for the rules. You try going in there at 10:29 and ordering a cheeseburger, they won't do it.
Exactly. And they also have a syndicated crime ring that protects them. They have a protection racket. That's why the Hamburglar is there.
And Mayor McCheese is on the take.
Well, it's not just rising crime and homelessness that is a threat to fast food in California. So is the California State Legislature. They try to kill off this industry like they try to kill off all the other industries. And they do so with moral superiority. But unlike with the amusement parks and unlike with other industries in California, the restaurant industry is fighting back. Listen to this. A coalition of business groups and California fast food franchisees says it has collected more than 1 million signatures in opposition to a new state law that would create an unelected fast food council to micromanage the industry, could cripple the industry with a drastic increase in its minimum wage, and could send the cost of food soaring. The Save Local Restaurants Coalition announced today that organizers began submitting the signatures at the county level in late November. The signatures, which were due today, are expected to be transferred to the Secretary of State's office in the next week or so. The coalition needs to have collected about 623,000 signatures from registered California voters to put the Fast Food Accountability and Standards Recovery Act, or FAST Act, on the 2024 general election ballot and to block its implementation until voters have had a say.
And voters won't even read two words of that and still won't be able to understand what it is.
That's true. And Rob Bonta will be writing the title and summary, so we've got that going for us.
Now, I understand there's the concerns of, the owners and operators of fast food companies. Well, this coalition and this commission could raise wages, could add more sick days and stuff like that. And that's going to cost a lot of money. And I understand that argument. But how much did they pay per signature to get this thing on the ballot?
Did they pay in money or Happy Meals? But this is quintessential California. We have inflation that is making this state unaffordable to live in, particularly for people who are on the margins. Who eats at fast food restaurants? People who are on the margins. People who cannot afford to go to higher end restaurants or say they can't afford fruits and vegetables. That's a lie, by the way. You're just choosing the Big Mac over the fruits and vegetables because the Big Mac tastes better.
Hell, we let you use your food stamps at the fast food drive-thrus.
That's right. But if this actually happens, it's going to cause the price of a Big Mac or a double-double or whatever to go through the roof. They never miss an opportunity to kick you in the crotch when they've already screwed something up.
Maybe Gavin Newsom will start a new campaign. McDonald's is ripping you off.
Well, if he can do it with the oil companies, why can't he do it with the trans fat companies?
There we go. Let's see a windfall profits tax for Jack in the Box. They've definitely taken enough of my money this year.
But I do believe the difference between Starbucks laying down for the rise in crime and Disney laying down for Disneyland being closed, and the fact that the restaurants are fighting back, and they're fighting back hard on this one, is that the franchisees have a very different attitude than corporate structures in Burbank or Seattle. They look at the world entirely different. McDonald's has a constituency of local owners who they have to keep happy. And if those people aren't happy, and you think of someone who owns a McDonald's and you think of people who just mint money, in many cases, these are people who are small business owners. That's a hand-to-mouth sort of world. And you have crime that's making it so that your customers aren't safe, or you have state laws that are making it so you can't make a buck. That takes away your ability to make a living. And these people are fighting back, and I'm glad that they are.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.